You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
From Shakespeare to Schwartz, from Fosse to Alvin Ailey, from Sondheim to Bareilles, from McNally to Fay, it happened to the greats, it still happens every day. When lightning strikes, it's the moment you know. When lightning strikes, where you're meant to go. You can stand and shout Eureka, do whatever you like. You'll never forget the moment when lightning strikes.
Hi. This is Gerald Brunner, and you're listening to When Lightning Strikes, where we talk about the tingly mic drop moments that led you to becoming an artist. Bonnie Milligan stars in the hit Broadway musical Kimberly Akimbo at the Booth Theater. The show began at the Atlantic Theater Company with Bonnie winning the Lucille Lortel Award and getting nominated for a Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, and Drama League Award for her utterly brilliant performance as Aunt Deborah. Bonnie's other credits include Head Over Heels, Kinky Boots, and Search Party. Just this month, the gorgeous Kimberly Akimbo original Broadway cast recording debuts on Ghostlight Records. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for coming on the show. It's a joy to have you. I am in love with Kimberly Akimbo and especially Aunt Deborah. I mean, I love all the characters and they're all so lovable in their own complicated way. Can you take me to when you found out about Kimberly Akimbo? What went through your mind?
When I found out I booked it, or when I found out they wanted an audition?
When you found out they wanted an audition, when you first heard.
So when I first heard about it was the beginning of March of 2020. And it was one of those emails from my agent to say, just putting a feeler, would you want to audition for this? We don't have dates yet or audition material. And they had attached the play for me to read. I had read it years ago before, but I thought, yeah, let me reread this. And it just made me laugh so much. And also it was very deep. So I thought, oh my gosh, I would love to be a part of this production.
So for people who might not know about Kimberly Akimbo and what it's about, because it's such a unique show, can you talk about what the show is about and your amazing character, Aunt Deborah?
Yeah. So Kimberly Akimbo tells the tale of Kimberly Lovaco, is actually her last name, who is a New Jersey teenager played by Tony Award winner Victoria Clark, who has a fictional aging disease that essentially ages her body 4.5 times faster than normal. So she's a girl who's about to turn 16 who looks like she's in her 60s. And the median life expectancy of this disease is 16. So putting that birthday upon us and a dysfunctional family and her own sense of mortality and what she has to do on this earth with what she has left kind of gives this beautiful, hilarious, insane new musical by David Lindsay Abaire and Janine Tesori. And I get to play her, you know, fun-loving con artist aunt who comes back into her life, who has a big scam she wants help with. And that sort of sets everything in a different motion than normal for Kimmy. We have Stephen Boyer, who is Tony nominee, you know, playing her alcoholic father buddy. We have the brilliant Ali Mazzi playing her narcissistic and, you know, hypochondriac mother, Patty. And a slew of new young talent playing all of her fellow teenagers in school, including amazing newcomer Justin Cooley, as her soon-to-be very good friend, Seth.
Every character is so rich, and even the ones who have, you know, questionable motives or are really messed up, you know there's so much love inside of them. And I can tell, even as flawed as dear Aunt Deborah is, she loves Kimberly so much.
Deeply. Know? Yeah. I said early on, I kept asking David Lindsay Abaire, I said, I see love here, right? Like, am I off track? Like, I think I deeply love her, and I would love to take that angle where she's not just some, you know, criminal, bad guy or whatever, that it's a survivor. It's someone who's been through some stuff, and no spoiler alerts, but something big really just recently happened, and she's got to get out of town. And so the stakes are high, and I just need one quick scam to get me the money to leave. And in this complication, I think I deeply love Kimberly. I said early on, I imagine how I play it is she's my favorite person in the world. She's probably the one person who doesn't just tolerate me, but likes being around me. And so and I have found amazing connection and friendship in Vicky Clark. So it's fun to get to play with her.
And she's so convincing as a 15-year-old going on 16, which is so extraordinary, yes. You know, when you think about that. And I think it's even as much as you're talking about an illness, and there's that brilliant song, My Disease, and it's the most life-affirming show. It's about hope. It's about living your life. It's about joy. Yeah. And I'm convinced at the end of the day, Aunt Deborah, in her way, tell me if you think this is right, that she really thinks she's saving Kimberly in some way.
Yeah.
And the kids.
I think in my own way, I'd said, like, you know, this is my version of parenting. This is my version of love, is to tell you, you have to go out. I have this amazing number called Better in when I first come out. And it's, sure, it's to try to get her to come in on my scam. But essentially, it is a life lesson that you hear her repeat later, you know, not just me, but Kimmy, that it really gets through, that it's like, if you want something, you need to go do it yourself, because no one else is going to do it for you. And I think that has been Deborah's life experience. I come at her from a place of, loneliness and pain, that I haven't had anybody really come through for me. And I think there's an important key in that of victimhood, you know. I've known some complicated people in my life, and who would never see themselves as a villain, or they're not like malicious. They just, who have really hurt people because they are hurting themselves, and they're just trying to survive. And so that was always the goal, is to just be human, and we're flawed, and we're doing what we can. And so I think at this point, when we meet Deborah, she's, you know, got her back up against the wall, and she's fighting to get out. But in that first number to Kimmy, it is an act of love to say, babe, let's just, you know, it might be hard and weird, but it's going to be liberating if you just don't wait for your train wreck of a set of parents to do anything for you. Go do it for yourself. I did. It's okay.
You're right. And there's a lyric in Better. Oh my God, I could listen to that 20 times a day, and it wouldn't be enough. It's the best song. And I'm excited everybody's going to get to hear it, because the original Broadway cast recording debuts this month on Ghostlight Records. So you can hear it, lots of you belting those incredible notes, the pathos, the pain, the joy, the humor. There's this one lyric that just, I mean, there's so many lyrics in that song that just, like, that I have this guttural laugh that I can't, no matter how many times I hear it. But even the lyric, let me underscore that they were beautiful.
Yeah.
You're talking about rings that you kind of scammed your way to getting. That even that tells me so much about Aunt Deborah, to say the word underscore.
Yeah.
Am I reading into this too much?
No, you're not.
So I'd love to hear about your lightning strikes moment when you knew you had to be an artist. I know you, tell me, you grew up in the Midwest, right? In Ohio and Illinois and sang as a child and sing in church.
Yeah, the singing was definitely always, that was a very early thing for me when I guess the lightning strike moment of like, oh, I'm meant to do this. I remember I was very, very little. I was probably like, wow, I don't know. One of my very first memories, I think, that it's very concrete about it. I was 5 years old and the family was doing a group number at church, you know, and my mom and dad, my brother and I. And I got to sing the verse. Well, they were going to have my brother and I each sing a verse, and my brother didn't want to. And I said, I'll do it. I was five. And they're like, okay. And so I sang both of the verses. And, you know, my mom and dad only came in on the chorus, and so did my brother. And I remember being like, yes, me. I would like that. And, you know, my brother was 10, and he just was like, ew, no. And I said, absolutely. And from being a very young age, having people come up to me and being emotionally moved by what I had done, and I thought I was just singing, you know, that I thought, oh, I remember that sticking with me. I don't know that it was as lightning strikes as the I get the verses. but it was always something that, you know, was it was always something that people around me really affirmed, that there's a gift here and there's a calling here and there's something special that you should pursue with it. And then when I was in fifth grade, I got the lead in the Christmas play at school. And what we used to do, it was a very small school, small towns together. So it was about 30 kids in a grade. And so we could fit the entire elementary school in the gymnasium, and on the bleachers, K through four would sit and do all the singing, and they would put, you know, folding chairs on the court, and that's where the parents and family sat. And then there was a stage at the end of the gymnasium. And so the fifth graders got to be the actors in the play, and then the whole school would sing. And so it was, you know, you sat in the bleachers until fifth grade singing the songs. And fifth grade, I got the lead. I got to be one of their two elves who saved Christmas. And I was Georgianne. And I just remember being like, oh, okay, this, yep, okay, yeah, that's it. And being so excited, and there was comedy with it, you know, and making people laugh and thinking, oh, wait, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an actress, and I'm, you know, always sing and stuff like that. So those were kind of my childhood, like, lightning moments for sure.
Do you remember what it was? And was this a play that they wrote, this Christmas play, you got to be the elves?
I mean, I think it was, I'm not even sure the name of the show, but it was, I feel like there's probably, you know, some titles that people have written of shows to, like, give to elementary schools, you know, around the country that aren't, like, actual, yeah, like, yeah, big, big titles. I feel like it was one of those. I don't know if it was any of our people that wrote it, but it was definitely an original piece with lots of choral numbers for the rest of the school to sing, and then us to get to act. And, yeah, so I'm not even sure the title of the show, but I just remember being so excited and the joy of getting to be on the stage acting was my first time doing that. I'd sung a bunch, but I'd never, like, done a character, you know, I'd never not been myself. And I remember just falling into that and falling in love with the make-believe of it all.
And then I've read that you, from there, ultimately got to Ohio State, where you got to study theater. And that's really...
Yep.
Yeah. And how did you go from... And then at Ohio State, that's where you really found your singing, or that's where you got your training. Is that right?
Yeah. So I grew up for the first part of my life in central Illinois, and then I moved to Ohio when I was 16. My parents had divorced. My mom was remarried, and that's where her husband sells, my stepdad sells farm equipment. So it was an area where he could open up his own shop, store, business, you know. And my dad had been from Detroit. So my dad went back to Detroit and we went to Northwest Ohio. And so when it came time for school, Ohio State, you know, I got the most money offers from them. I was a very good student and I kind of begrudgingly went. I thought, oh, I wanted to go to conservatory and we didn't have much money. So that, you know, didn't feel as viable. But I ended up loving it because it was really an amazing, it was just an acting program. It wasn't musical theater. I feel like I developed a lot as an actor. It was also a big emphasis on new work. So I developed as a writer also. And I just think that critical thinking and the dramaturgy of it all has made me a better actor also, to think deeply about how things are working or, you know, what motivations, et cetera, are behind things. And so it was there. I was in a couple choirs while I was there. I did a gospel choir, did a concert choir. I took voice lessons for one quarter or semester from a TA. But it was through the Kristen Linklater voice technique class that we were all trained in as actors for speaking that I was learning about my resonators, that I was learning, oh, wait, when I warm this up, this kind of sounds like belting. And so I developed as my singing voice, even separately there in a non, you know, singing training program, that I branched out as an artist during college, finding my own way of like my own sound. And yeah.
I love that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Is it hard to describe or put into words how singing makes you feel? I mean, I know how I feel when I hear you sing. You know, it's like it goes through you. It's like it's exciting. But how does it make you feel?
And for me, you know, because it's something I've done since I was so little and I'm not the most super trained of singers, that I'm very instinctual. And, you know, I've taken things, I know clearly how parts of my voice work, the different trainings I've had over the years, that it feels very freeing. It is very... I always said I feel like music was one of the first languages I spoke. And so it feels the best way to possibly express myself. When I first moved to the city, I did some temping, but then I also waitressed for like 6 years. And I waited tables at Landmark at the time, Warner Center in Columbus Circle. And I would leave a shift, and sometimes it could be a great shift and you're like in a good mood. It could be a horrible shift and you are so sad that you're doing this and not what you're so desperately wanting to do, that there was a karaoke room place on around the corner on 53rd Street and 8th that I would go to. And I would sometimes, usually if it was a good mood, I would ask. I had a couple coworkers. One of them right now has made his own Broadway debut splash, Kennedy Kanagawa, who was Milky White in the Into the Woods revival. He and I were, yeah, wow. We're waiting tables. And our dear friend Jefferson, the three of us would go and rent a room at private karaoke and just sing. And sometimes it was a celebration thing. And sometimes if I was having a horrible day, I would go and rent the room by myself. And I would just sit there and sing as catharsis, as I just need to get this out. And it was just, it was for no one. It was for me sitting alone in a room singing some karaoke. And again, if it was a good time, or even there was many days they were like, I'm having a horrible day. Do you want to go karaoke? Yes. And that's where Kennedy and I and our friend Jeff would go and get a room and do some duets and do some. Then you're like, you know, you either turn the day around or you let it out or you celebrate. I remember when I booked Head Over Heels, when I found out it was going to Broadway, going and, you know, them putting in the Go-Go's and being like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this on Broadway. Like it's been everything. So that is singing for me, that it is getting the deepest parts of myself out, you know, vocally. And when it's the character and when I get to do it in show, it's amazing. It's always an extension of where the character's coming from, because that is what singing is for me, is an extension of my emotional being. And that is also what musicals are, right? They always say, if you can't speak it anymore, you have to sing. And that is what's amazing about this piece, is it's beautifully written. So it's not a stretch to find out why I'm singing something. It is, your next move would be to sing. And that's why also I think it sounds as complex and varied as it is because that's the journey of this character and the brilliant Jeanine Tesori, that it's not all belting. It is it's sly. It's like getting somebody in on something, and that, you know, that it's amazing to work with her on that.
I think about the song Take the Turn, you know, when you're eating, when you're at the dinner
inevitable
table.
Turn.
Yes. Yes. And how subtle it is, and it's it's quiet, and it's so real and human, and how you're all having, and it's you think, how can you express a song where everybody, all the characters, have an inner life, and then it crescendos, you know, and forgive me, I said the wrong title. Yeah.
Oh, you're fine. Inevitable Turn is what it's called, but you got it.
Inevitable Turn.
It's essentially like, I mean, in a complicated family, when you're like, this is going great, but it's gonna turn. And when's it gonna turn? It's gonna have to. It's inevitable. That it is sly. I remember early on, you know, we got a note from our music director, like, even lighter, like to us singing it. He's like, it should just feel conversational. It should feel like, don't sing it. Don't try to be like, because I remember there was an instinct to me to be like, they never do, to like be a little bit more biting, not like super loud, but even biting in my approach. And he's like, but it hasn't turned yet, so don't. And I'm like, okay. Like it's brilliantly thought out by everyone. And Chris Fenwick, who is our music director, works so closely with Jeanine Tesori all the time, that like he is such a storyteller, and the way he plays the piano and conducts the show, you know, like that. All right, we've got this story to tell. Like it hasn't erupted yet. So pull it back. Okay.
It's such a distinctly unique show. I mean, every song is a gem, is a masterclass, you know, between Jeanine, your music director, and David Lindsay Bear, you know, and then your voices, and it's extraordinary. Yeah. And I have read that you grew up singing Whitney and Mariah and Reba and Celine, and knew the lyrics to Fancy when you were a kid, and that you also discovered. same fancy as a child. I love that song. And then you discovered show tunes early on. What or Broadway cast albums? What cast albums?
Yes.
Did you discover? When you were a kid.
I mean, there were so many, and it was always fun to like go to Barnes and Noble when an album would be released, that you get to like go and kind of like hear and read the booklet to see what it was about, you know, back in the day before streaming. But, you know, I fell so in love with Ragtime and The Last 5 Years, Songs for New World, The Wild Party, both of them. I remember hearing Take One Step from Lipa's Wild Party that had Brian D'Arcy James. It was just some of the best acting I've ever heard on an album, you know, without ever having seen the show. I knew exactly what his emotional life was, being so inspired. Thoroughly Modern Millie, my mom brought me to the city to see as a teenager, you know, for my birthday. And now here I am working with Janine Tesori, you know, like that's amazing. And when I first moved to the city, we were driving and I had my mom and stepdad were driving me in, and I played Not for the Life of Me from Thoroughly Modern Millie as we were like coming into the city. And I just thought, you know, like this girl leaving a one light town where the light is always red. It's felt so real. You know, we had very few stoplights in the town I was coming from and going to the big city. And so I played that as we drove into New York for me to move here. And now I'm on Broadway doing an original Janine Tesori show. It's incredible and full circle. And, yeah, very much.
I love that full circle-ness of it. And what was it like to record the cast album? I mean, here you are. I love that you originated the role in Head Over Heels and now originated, you know, Aunt Deborah and Kimberly Akimbo. But what was that like to be on the cast album?
I mean, it is such a special dream come true kind of thing. I think when we did the Head Over Heels album, it was over the course of 2 days, I was so busy and I was so exhausted. And I took a video of myself, like I sent it to a friend, but I had just got out. I took a cab home that night and I got out and I was recording myself. And I said, I'm so tired, but I'm really proud of myself. I can't believe that happened. And I was crying. And that's so much of it. And this, they split us up over 2 days. We've recorded part of it in October. We were in previews or we were, maybe we were in tech. We hadn't even started previews. And then the other part in December in case things changed in previews, et cetera. And it's just a magical, beautiful thing. And to get to do the show with so many Broadway debuts and even people who've never been on an original Broadway cast album before who have been on Broadway, you know, and it's just like, the specialness, the dream come trueiness of it all is not lost on me. And I just remember, you know, telling the younger people, especially who were these Broadway loving kids, take this in. Like, you're on an original Broadway cast album. Like, that's what's happening right now. And to sit in a room and across the room in a booth is Victoria Clark and seeing, you know, a piece of paper, we all had our names around our things. And it just, even though we're very good friends now, to see a piece of paper that says Victoria Clark, and there she is in a recording booth. And then to realize I'm recording an original Broadway cast album with Victoria Clark is like overwhelming and beautiful. I mean, there were times off Broadway that I would just sit there, it was just her and I on stage, in a moment at the end of Act One, and I would think, sometimes I would snap into myself, you know, and think, I'm on a stage with Victoria Clark right now. Wow. And then I'd have to, you know, go back to like Deborah world. But it's magical. And again, I pulled, you know, Janine aside. I've told her the story of playing Thoroughly Modern Millie, like through tears, as I'm like, this is just really amazing. Like, I'm a theater loving girl at heart who is getting to do it. Like, I hope it's never run of the mill and normal. I hope it's always magical and pinch me.
Can I ask you what kept you, other than doing karaoke, which I love, when you were a struggling actress, performer, you know, going on auditions, waiting tables, what kept you going? And what was one of the first professional gigs that you got?
I think I have always had a very supportive family, to tell you the truth. Yeah. They never once were like, maybe you should do something else. I was a very, very good student, straight A's. And here I went into this business that, you know, is not the most stable. And it's like, you could have been a doctor. What's wrong with you? No, at this point, I'm like, absolutely not. But they always really affirmed this, like, there is a calling on your life. And this is something that you're meant to do. You're just meant to do it. And so, you know, a lot of teary conversations with my mom if I didn't get something, or, you know, there were things that happened even during the pandemic that I had been a part of developing some things, like for television, or that I thought was going to go my way. And then pandemic, there were different rules that happened, so I couldn't travel. I couldn't go do it. And the disappointment of even just something that was going to happen that couldn't anymore. Or she helped me with a bunch of self-tapes during that time. And she would be like, how did that not happen? How did you not get that? I'm like, because that happens, Ma. And she's like, but you were great. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's okay. And to kind of re-see it through my mother's eyes was so interesting in my 30s, you know, to sit there and have someone experience that you just have to, it's not about you, which is a long lesson to learn. And that was part of learning it through all the disappointment, is to try to tell yourself, it's not personal. It is something else. And to go karaoke and then to talk it out with my friends and call home. And, you know, the support system is the only way I could have gotten through everything. And people who love me for beyond what I can do on a stage, but know that that isn't, who can remind me that that is not my entire worth as a human being, is what I can do. And so it's a lot of that. You know, there was some therapy there for years as well, to help me figure out all of that. And then you asked one other question.
Oh, your first professional job when you got to New York.
Oh, yeah. I did some community. It's a community theater that is really sweet, called the Village Light Opera Group down in Tribeca. And that was the first show I did in New York. And then my off-Broadway debut was in a show called Cuff Me, the 50 Shades of Grey parody musical. And it was just four of us. It was non-equity, but it was officially off-Broadway. I just remember it was the first thing on, like the first show I had done that was listed on Playbill, you know, that, yeah. I was like, oh, it's not off, it's off. And then I guess the next step up was officially an equity production, but they could use some non-equity members, which is me. And there was Jasper in Deadland, which is where I met Matt Doyle. It was a Ryan Scott Oliver musical we did with Prospect Theater. And then I got my equity card doing the first national tour of Kinky Boots. And so that was kind of the steps along the way. Yeah.
And can you just take me to when you got Head Over Heels? Because that was your Broadway debut.
Yeah.
What went through your mind?
That was
take me to that point when you heard. Yeah.
I was a member of the Flea Theater down in Tribeca, and a guest director was named Ed Sylvanus Iskandar, and he would do these epics. And so it was through those I made a bunch of connections. And Jeff Witte, who originally conceived and wrote the book of Head Over Heels, the first part of it, he saw me there and was inspired. And so he and Ed were putting together a reading. And asked if I would be in it. And I was non-equity. I had no agent. And I was like, okay, sure, this new musical, great. And that was in, I think, May of 2014, April or May. It was right before I left to go on tour. And so we'd done the reading. It went great. And then I was on tour, and they were setting a world premiere at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in 2015. And I got the call that they would like to keep me with it. So I did the tour for about 8 months, and then I left to go do Head Over Heels at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And then, you know, many things happen where it seemed like, okay, I think that's it. That's the journey with the show. It's done. And it was beautiful, and I had an amazing time, and I'm sad, but that's probably not going to happen. Okay. And I came back to the city. I did an off-Broadway show, and I found out in early 2016 that they were going to bring the show back. And this time it was with all new people except for me, which was a crazy thing. And Michael Mayer was on board to direct. And so in the summer of 2016, we went up to Vassar to work on it. Anyway, that's like, these were the long steps of the journey. And now I'm equity finally, you know, I have an agent, all this stuff. And we did a lab, which means 4 weeks of work on something, in January of 2017. And it was not till the end of 17. It was, I think it was October of 2017, I got the call, we're going to Broadway. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, all these years from the first reading in 2014 to now, and it's actually going to happen, and you think it's going to happen, and it's not, and it's just a big roller coaster. And they announced that we were going to go that summer. I think it was January of 2018, they made the announcement, and then we were on Broadway. We went to the Curran in San Francisco first, and then we went to Broadway that summer. And it was many things, right? It was a culmination of years of work on this thing and that I had really gotten to develop and create and work with. And there was a lot of hardship attached to that and a lot of joy attached to that. And most importantly, I was going to get to be on Broadway, which is something I had been longing for so many years. And to get to do it in a role that I had really, you know, created from the ground up with everyone was just a cherry on top. And so that it was a multitude of emotions when I found out it was actually happening. Like, a part of me kept waiting for the rug to be pulled out from under me. I was like, it's not going to happen, because I thought this for years. It's not. And so when I was with my best friend, when they announced it to like a crowd, the Go-Go's were playing a show, and they announced it to the crowd, and we got to go on stage and be with them for a number. And I came and I saw my friend, and we looked at each other, and he's like, Bonnie, it's actually happening. And we both burst into tears, because I just for so long was like, sure, okay, I'll believe it when I see it. And it just was one of those culminations of, oh my gosh, you've been putting in the work and the hope for years and years, and it's actually going to happen. And so it was many, many feelings.
Oh gosh. Yes, for it to finally happen, I mean, after all that, those years. People don't realize it can take 7 years or longer for a show to get, a musical especially, to get to Broadway. And is there a role that you're aching to play, or is it yet to be written?
I mean, there's plenty of things I've always said that are like later in life kind of roles. That are very, you know, the Sondheim of it all. I would love to do some Sondheim, anything. Throw me a bone. I'm ready. But I'd love to be Mama Rose one day. And I would love to do a Mrs. Lovett. I would love to do, many things that I'm like, I'll age into that later. But, and then just a new show. That's been such a joy to have two times I get to originate it. So it's more about working with exciting artists for me at this point. Yeah.
Bonnie, it's such a joy to see you and Kimberly Akimbo and to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you for having me. This has been so lovely.
It's so lovely. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
It still happens every day when lightning strikes. It's the moment you know.
The theme song was written by Tom McGovern. This episode was edited by Kyle Moore.
This episode was produced by Anna Stroud.
When lightning strikes.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.